how hasn't this person been photographed? How can we find an angle that hasn't been done with this person? And really just doing something that is genuinely unique and is something they're going to enjoy, because when there's nothing worse than having a, you know, a star come and just be bored.
My name is Chris Campbell, and this is Creative Catalyst, the podcast that sheds light on creative journeys within the industry. In this season, we're talking to creatives from around the world about their experiences from the grassroots up. They will be sharing their perspective, stories, and advice they'd give to others, along with interesting slices of the career they've had within the industry. My guest this week is Miles Holder, editor-in-chief of Fault Magazine. Miles has managed to create a really unique voice for the medium. In this episode, we talk about how Miles worked his way through multiple roles in Fault before becoming their editor-in-chief, how he stays curious, and what he wants to see from the future of the magazine. Miles Holder, welcome to Creative Catalyst, all the way from Germany. I feel like it's a very cool moment when I can speak to people from other countries about what they do. But I then found out that you're not actually from Germany, which doesn't mean that I'm upset, but it just means that I'm slightly let down, because I really thought I was going to speak to someone with a cool German accent. But you're from London, and I know lots of people from London, so I wanted more fun, exotic friends. Why have you done this to me, Miles?
I can only apologise. Sorry about that. Yeah. You've got another Londoner.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, it's Monday. It's another Monday, but it's good. Like, all the days have now run into each other, which has the added benefit of Monday no longer feels dreaded. It's just a day 380 in lockdown. So there are some positives, yeah, which you've got to look for in these times.
I didn't even think about that, because every day feels the same now. In a way, there are no Mondays. And that, in a way, could be great. There are also no Fridays, but I don't know. Are you someone who's a very like Monday to Friday person? Or I feel like, because of the amount of things you do, do you really have that type of structure? Or is it just kind of like every day is a creative day? Or what does that look like for you?
Do you know what? Since lockdown actually started, I've actually had so much more structure in my days. I used to like just have, because I work with people in LA so much, or people in New York, like, and normally when I work with clients here in Europe, I've got to be basically just awake for so many hours. But now since lockdown, I've been like, I feel like everybody's more understanding of what us freelancers have to do, or what us people who work across time zones have to be like. So I no longer feel guilty when I'm like, no, I'm turning off my laptop. You won't get a reply from me until Monday. So I've been a lot more attentive to that. And, you know, sadly, it's happened when I've got nothing to do on the weekends. But once the world reopens, I'm sure I'll feel a much more benefit from it, which is cool.
Yeah, do you feel like you're going to carry that on going forward, that you'll carry on this kind of a little bit more of a, I don't want to say structure, but a little bit more of knowing your own boundaries within your day?
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's no way I'm going back to up at 9 a.m., like awake, still awake 5 a.m. the next day, being like, this is normal. This is just what us creatives have to do.
Doesn't
I really realize that is such a false economy. But I think a lot of people yeah, have woken up to that. So,
do you feel like you've just caught up on sleep for the last year? That's all your year has been, is just sleeping?
I wish. No, sadly not. But I am definitely sleeping a lot more hours than I used to. So I'm slowly catching up. It'll be a long process, but I will get those hours in. It will happen.
Nice, I'm glad. Now, I know that we were talking about beforehand what quote you have brought, and I know that all of my guests bring something from Do Epic Shit to Create Not Consume. What have you brought with you today? And I know we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about this.
See, I don't really have any mantras or like any inspirational quotes, sadly. But like, I do feel that, you know, inspiration just comes from so many different places. It feels sort of limiting if I only were to have this one mantra or this one, you know, quote that's ever stuck out. Like, honestly, I can get inspiration from graffiti or a bloody TikTok. Like, I'm not tying myself down to one source of inspiration. Growing up, I was not good at art. I can't draw. I couldn't paint. Like, I'd just go to, you know, you'd get your hour art class. I'd sort of just sit there, like, I don't know, making paper airplanes. So I never actually really felt like, you know, art or the arts was anything, you know, in my professional future. Which is saying something because, you know, my mum was actually a fashion designer growing up, and my eldest brother was an illustrator. It wasn't until, you know, when A-levels come around when you're 16 and, you know, you've got to sort of pick your A-levels, and I picked, you know, 3 out of 4, and I was like, right, and you're meant to pick 4, I think, for year 12. And yeah. I had a spare block, and there were only three subjects that could go in that block, and I can't remember what the other two were, but I clearly was not very good at them, either of them. So I picked, so I was like, oh, there's a photography section. I've held a camera, let's try this. And, you know, because of my brother, we had Photoshop on the, like, you know, the home computer. So yeah, I just sort of picked it on a whim, and then the rest, as they say, is history. And it turns out I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, and that was something that you really discovered within college.
Yeah, there wasn't any sort of inkling in my mind before that. And if there was, it was definitely subconscious. Like, you know, we had cameras at home. My dad had a really good Olympus camera growing up, but it wasn't, you know, I think when you speak to a lot of photographers, they're like, oh, you know, we had this Olympus at home and I picked it up when I was 4 and I was just so intrigued. No, that didn't happen for me. I was like, right, I need to fill this timetable up, and this sounds like something I might, you know, be able to get an easy grade in. There's another timeline where I did not pick that, and my life has gone a completely different direction. But sometimes it's the smallest of chances that can make such big changes.
Did you think you had an idea of what you wanted to do it when you were at A-levels? And was it one of those other three subjects that you're like, no, this is what I'm going to do? Or was it you just didn't really know which route you were going to take, and then you found photography within that and decided that maybe that's what you should be doing?
To be honest, it wasn't actually until leaving school. So basically, like I mentioned earlier, I wasn't very good at, you know, practical, you know, arts. Like, I wasn't good at painting. I wasn't good at sketching or you know, sculpting. And I think the normal route for art students is you leave college, you then go and do a 1-year art foundation course, which is sort of all those, which is where you sort of go through all the different arts and you find out which route you want to take. So I was like, right, I guess I like photography, let me try and do this art foundation course. Applied, went with my, you know, A2 massive portfolio, and I get there and I'm like, hey, I can't actually draw, paint or do any of this stuff, but look at my photography. Did not get in, and that was sort of the...
What?
did not get into any art foundation course. And I think that... And I remember just being like, right, my life is over. I don't know, like, I don't know what I'm going to do here. And it's so funny. I was sat at, you know, I sort of sat at home wondering, like, what's going to become of me? And, you know, they put a lot of pressure on young people, or they did at least back then, because I was like, right, my life is over. I don't know, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, get a shovel and, you know, grave dig. But then I was watching Ugly Betty, which was set in like a magazine, and I was looking at it and I was like, wait, there are people working here whose job it is to work on photo shoots and put together photo shoots and do all this stuff. And I remember that evening I went and I put all my, I created a CV and I wrote to about I couldn't tell you how many magazines I wrote to. I think I just sat there, Googled magazine, and just went to like the 40th page on Google search, applied to all of them, being like, please let me come as an intern. I just want to work for free and I will make the best coffee, whatever. Like, and I just blasted that out to every magazine. And I was really lucky because one of those 300 got back to me. And they were like, it was Men's Health magazine, and the fashion editor was like, hey, we just need somebody for a month to, you know, come and work in our fashion closet and get stuff sorted. And I was like, yes, that's me. See you there. I literally only had knowledge from Ugly Betty about how publishing worked at this point. I go and I meet him. I'm still in contact with this person after so many years. His name's Eric, and he's a really talented stylist, freelance now. And I go and I meet him, and he's like, sure, we can only, you know, we're only allowed to take work experience people for a month. So come for a month. And I'm like, oh, great. And, you know, I'm sort of going home, being like, finally. So this is, you know, I finally, you know, no longer a failure. I've got my first foot in the door, and I'll go home. I was working at Nike Town as like a, you know, weekend job at this time. And in my head, adults just worked Monday through Sunday. Like, I assumed that I would have to go into this office Monday through Sunday. So, and I went into Nike Town on my way home, and I was like, hi, unfortunately, I won't be able to work here anymore because I've got a job now. So, see you. And I remember I got home and I told my parents. My mum was like, why did you leave your job? you work Monday through Friday at offices, so you could still keep the, you could keep your job. And I remember being like, did not know that. I just assumed.
Very interesting.
So I phoned up Night Town. I was like, actually, it turns out I am still free on the weekend. So disregard everything I just told you.
So that was your first real journey into the editorial space. Had you been surrounded by magazines when you were younger, or was it really Ugly Betty and you realizing that people who are photographers actually work within these areas? Oh, maybe that's something I could do. Was it all down to Ugly Betty for you?
Oh, no, that sounds so bad. my life journey.
If you put it that way,
teeters.
It sounds terrible.
Teeters on me watching Ugly Betty. My mum collected Vogue sort of growing up. We had magazines around, but I don't think I was ever that interested in them, to be honest. Like, I didn't buy magazines. I didn't really care for them, but I was interested in movies. And, you know, when I started studying photography, I got more interested in, you know, reading about photography, maybe more from coffee table photographers' books than anything else. But Ugly Betty has has played a huge role. Not that I've ever thought about this, to be honest, but now that I have, I feel lesser, but I'm joking.
That's crazy, though. So did you ever think that editor-in-chief would be something you were going to do? Or was it really you just felt like the photography side of the magazine area was something you were going to go into and try out because you were into photography? And you never thought that editor-in-chief or anything on that side was ever really going to be your path?
It sort of happened by accident. So, you know, following on from, you know, mental health, I still had that whole, you know, year of, you know, no foundation course. So, you know, from there I went, and because of that I was working on, like, at Men's Health, I was working on a fashion desk and was awful at it. But when working on the fashion desk, I looked across and I saw, oh, wait, there's something called a picture desk where, you know, people, it's someone's job to actually, you know, create these photo shoots, to go and shoot them or to hire teams and set all that up together. And I was like, that looks like somewhere I should be working instead. So then for the remainder of my sort of gap year, I went and I started applying to two picture desks on other magazines. You know, I ran the gauntlet of, you know, lads magazines that ended up being. I went to FHM and Loaded magazine and all the magazines that no longer exist today. But I went and I was the intern for those for them, and then those I was actually helping out, you know, with picture research and researching photographers and, you know, going to shoots and just, you know, just holding a reflector but loving it because I was there, I was on the shoot and I was, you know, part of this glamorous life of lads magazine editorials. But it was honestly, you could have told me I was in Hollywood, you know, being, you know, 18 and working on a magazine stuff. I was like, wow. And then all throughout uni, and I sort of continued to do work experience over the summer break.
That year where you were getting all the internships and working Sundays and Saturdays at Nike Town, was that the year where you decided that the magazine industry was what you wanted to go into, and then that's what you went to study at university?
Yeah, correct. So after that, I realized, oh, I actually love this. And I still love photography. So I went and I studied photography, did a degree in it. Still interning all the way through. I didn't focus too much on the fashion photography side while I was actually studying photography. There was a lot of, I think I went to quite a traditional institution. So we were learning really great photography theory and the history of photography. So I got really interested in, you know, more documentary style photography, but always with it in mind that, you know, once I stop my studies, I'm going to go and work in publishing. And, you know, the dream back then was I want to be picture editor. You know, I want to be the picture editor of a magazine, and the picture editor is the person that, you know, looks after to creative. So, you know, I kept applying. And then in my second year of university, I applied for an internship with Fault magazine. And I went and I met the then publishing director, and he was like, okay, cool. Well, you can set stuff up on this site. Do you also do writing? Do you do interviews and writing? I didn't, you know, but I said, yes, I love to write. I love to do interviews.
Of course I do. What do you mean?
Like, sure, why not? And then that's how I got involved with the writing stuff. You know, it was like, cool, well, do you want to interview this up-and-coming artist? And I was like, this then up-and-coming artist, Charlie XCX, mind you. And I remember just being there like, yes, yeah, sure. I have no idea who this is, but I'll go and I'll interview this up-and-comer.
That's crazy.
I just sort of kept kept rolling with it. And I never once felt like I was a good writer. And I probably, it's still not my number one skill, but I think I found a way that works for me where I can create a story very similar to the way I create a photo shoot. You know, I find an angle, I find a reasoning for why it's happening that way, and then we put it together.
Do you feel like you've picked up most of your skills actually like on the job? Do you feel that there was stuff that you did take from university which was valuable, but actually working at Fault and all of the internships, that's where you truly pulled all those strings to gain that knowledge, which is what you kind of utilize today?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, this is probably also why I don't have a mantra. I just don't read enough creative books, but I learn by doing everything I do, you know. Every skill, I need to do it. I can't watch 100 tips with the creatives. It doesn't go in. And I'm also fully aware that I do things incorrectly or just not the way that other people do them because of this. But for me to be able to be successful in what I'm doing, I needed to find a way that it made sense in my mind. I can't follow somebody else's step by step because my brain will just not listen. Someone will give me a task and I need to find a way that my brain understands and my brain likes doing it. And that's the way I can compute it.
Have you felt like that's held you back in any way, or has that not really been an issue?
I can see how it's held me back, because it means that I've got to do everything in order to learn the best way to do it, which also means I have to do everything wrong.
Just pure time.
Yeah, just about, you know, about 20 times wrong before I find the best route. But I understand that's how I work and that's how I've had to understand tasks. And rather than see it as it's holding me back, I'm finding a way that I can expertly do it in a way that makes sense for me. And I try to find the positives in it.
And I think that has really defined, it seems like, the career you've had. And it's so cool that you did nearly all of your growth at the magazine you're now editor-in-chief at, which is Fault, which is where you got your first kind of break outside of university. Was there something about Fault that has made you stick around? Or do you think in general it just feels like you've had a great progression within the company and within the magazine itself?
What's been so great about Fault is that it's never been sort of all-consuming of my time. So, you know, when I left university, yeah, Fault was there, but I was also very aware of what the publishing industry is like, and actually an independent magazine to create a career off didn't seem like the bright and shiny future I sort of envisioned. So after university, I also really wanted to get a proper full-time job and office experience. So because of Fault and working within that, but doing that at the time, so it made sense for me. It allowed me to expand my career outside of publishing, with my creative production, and start, you know, working my way up the corporate ladder at the same time as still pushing my creative brain and creative output. So, you know, it's only very recently that both industries have sort of merged for me, and I've been able to see how both have helped the other. So, you know, when I left university, I started work. It was during the, you know, startup boom of 2013, where there was a startup sort of every other day. And I started working for a startup while also doing the magazine. And then, you know, as both sort of got bigger and better, I then left that startup, started working in the travel industry, but while also moving up from intern to digital editor at Folk Magazine. And so they've progressed, you know, with one another quite well. And then, you know, last year I was actually, you know, I was like, right, both the magazine and my, you know, creative production career have actually grown to the point where I can work for myself now and create my own path from what I've learned from both sides of the industry. So I now take the creative learnings, still furthering Folk, but I now take all that I've learned from there, and I work for other brands, you know, like Mercedes, and I help them to create content which is both high quality, which I learned from Folk, but also very data driven and KPI focused, what I learned from all those years in, you know, corporate creative work.
And with that corporate creative work, that wasn't photography, was it? That's not what you were doing there. It was literally just you were doing jobs within those businesses.
No, some of it was photography, some of it was video creation or video editing, or some animation work as well. So very much the visual arts. And luckily, from learning so much about video editing from working with these other brands, I've also brought that over to Folk, and we now have, you know, outputting videos at a much higher rate and quality now, because, you know, I understand how videos are absorbed by the masses and how to do video marketing. So there's always this nice flow of learnings from one side of my stuff to the other.
They always seem to like intertwine with all the different skills you're picking up. And I know that from when you finished in 2013 was when all the boom happened with all the businesses, and that's when things started to come into play with regards to like Instagram and other social medias. And I guess that your journey with Folk and going from a heavily print magazine to, I guess, what you are today, do you think that was from social media? Or I know we talked about more the pandemic has pushed you there even more so than maybe it was pre-pandemic. But how has that journey been for you, going from a non-digital platform, which was the solid print magazine, to then having a digital influence? And what have you picked up from that?
Yeah, so do you know what? I think print is very, it was something that was very special to Folk, and is something that many people that buy print magazines still, there's still a big audience there. Sure, we're not consuming print media like we did, you know, 40 years ago, but it's not to say that the industry is dead altogether. So, and to me, previously, I very much felt very connected to the print magazine, but it was also, when, you know, everybody that's contributing to this also has other projects to work on, it was very labor intensive to create that print magazine, especially quarterly. I missed all my deadlines. But so when with the move to digital, it's actually been made a lot easier now that the music industry understands that as well. Because it used to be, you know, we've had some of the biggest names in the industry, but part of the pull or the draw to Folk was, oh, well, there's not so many print magazines out there, but this magazine here has a print, so let's offer them our biggest stars. And so in order for us to keep up in our game with the sort of clients we were getting, we had to have that print. Otherwise, there was no way we were going to get, you know, a Tinashe on a digital cover. It wouldn't happen. But thankfully, from very much starting from last year with the pandemic, people have now coming around to the idea that no, like, digital is still very much important. And the same players who are doing very well in print can flourish on digital. So while there is still a lot of value in print, more of the industry is coming around to it's not the be all or end all. Our digital platforms, we're still putting in that same amount of creativity, the same amount of creative work. Everyone's still hustling like crazy to create these editorials for digital. You're still receiving the high-end product that you wanted from print.
I thought it was interesting what you said with regards to the music industry and that being one of the sticking points with regards to your USP was that you could do a print version of that photo shoot you did, and the music industry really wanted that. And I think it kind of feels similar to how vinyl has really had a resurgence. And I think I don't think print's ever going to go away, kind of like I don't think vinyl's ever going to go away, because people like something they can hold in their hands and something that they know that, like, once everything's over, they'll still have that in their home, or that's still like a part of their identity. So I think that I think there is a true love for print and for physicalization of creative content. So I think that that's not going to go away. It's interesting you said that that was something you've battled with the music industry, trying to pull those guests through. How do you go about, because I'm always really impressed by, I was looking through all of your issues and the people you've actually had on your front covers and the interviews you've done. You've had some nut stars, like really, really big people in the movies, film, like TV, music. How do you go about trying to seek those people out? And I guess what, do you feel like it's fault reputation that has done that? Or do you think that there is just different ways that you've communicated with people which have brought them round to being involved?
Yeah, sure. So I can't speak for any of, you know, the agents or any of the publicists for why they still do. But I think, you know, when I'm actively going out and I'm pursuing someone, it's very much based on, look, you can go and you can have basically the same shoot in any of these, you know, other magazines, in these larger magazines that are on all the newsstands, and it's gonna do what it's always done. Or you can come to us, and we're a very small team of, you know, freelance creatives, but we're gonna actually take the time to actually say something different. You know, whenever I'm writing an interview questions for someone, I always go back and I read their previous interviews to make sure that we're not asking these guys the same questions. And it's surprising how many magazines or just interviewers, you know, you see these, you know, actors in the press junkets answering the same questions over and over again. And you're just like, wow, I bet you these guys would really appreciate if somebody actually went out there and tried to ask them stuff that they've never been asked before. Actually try to engage in a conversation, not about this, the endless, so who are you dating? Oh, that's nice. Like, I don't care about that.
Not listening,
you don't care,
just go
about
straight
that
on to the next question. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So one, when it comes to formulating the interview questions, I'm always like, right, what hasn't this person been asked that is still relevant and still interesting to the masses? So, which is why a lot of the times we're called Fault Magazine, so I like to always focus on, you know, the hardships, but also with a positive spin. You know, like, you've gone through, you know, I've read your biography, you've gone through these really tough times. Can you tell me how you got out of that? And there's ways of drawing these responses out of people in a way that doesn't seem like voyeuristic. It makes it seem that you're genuinely interested, and their information can actually, you know, help others, as opposed to, you know, oh no, you didn't get that mention you wanted. Tell us what we can do if we find ourselves in the same predicament. It's more about discussing, you know, mental health issues, social justice, and just finding ways to pull out the information that some publicists don't want them to release, but you know the star wants them to, and they really want to talk about. And then when it comes down to our creative, you know, I'm very lucky to have Shawnee Brown is our New York fashion editor. Edith Walker is our UK fashion editor. And their creative minds really help us to put together photo shoots that are very different to what a star has been seen in before. Our mood boards very much are directed by our own creativity, but also by looking at the history of other stars, being like, you know, right, how hasn't this person been photographed? How can we find an angle that hasn't been done with this person? And really just doing something that is genuinely unique and is something they're going to enjoy, because there's nothing worse than having a you know, a star come and just be bored or just be indifferent to what, you know, what you're doing there, because you just wasted everyone's time, right?
Yeah.
If you don't care about this interview or this photo shoot, your fans aren't going to care, our readers aren't going to care. Let's make this work.
How do you stay curious? Because I think that really plays, like, rings true with everything you're talking about, with trying to find different angles for shoots, trying to find different questions. How do you stay curious? And do you think that curiosity is something you've always had? Or do you think it's something that's built up as you've taken on more responsibilities?
Yeah, sure. I mean, one of the ways is always... I mean, I feature a lot of people who aren't, you know, personally musicians I listen to, who haven't been in films I watch, because that way I then become this perspective reader, right? You know, I become this person that has no knowledge on them. What would they have to say to make me interested in them? And that's the same thing I do in, you know, when I'm creative producing for another brand as well. You know, what does this brand have to show me to make me want to learn more about this brand? You know, so by continuously going after or, you know, approving artists that I know nothing about, it allows me to always stay curious as I'm researching them and as I'm gaining this new knowledge. Of course, you know, when it comes, I'm not turning down people I love, but I'm already curious about them.
I like you too much, get out.
Yeah, exactly.
You're never coming to this magazine, ever.
I love you, though. Yeah, so it's about...
I love you, but get out. Get out of my face.
So yeah, and yeah, I have always just been curious. I'm always interested. And also, I like finding out why I don't like stuff. Like, there's always a reason why I'm not interested in something, and working that out really helps, you know, take any emotion out of any decision.
And I guess that because you've gone through like 4 or 5 different roles within Fault Magazine, do you think that each one of those really brought something new out of you? And did you feel like there was like this core thing that carried you through the whole way? Or do you really feel like it has, like we're talking about how you like to be curious and finding people you don't know. Is that something that has always been your outlook, or is that something where you feel like that's been really brought in because you're now the editor-in-chief?
That's a really interesting question. It's actually still quite recent. It's only been a couple of years that I actually started to understand where this curiosity came from. I don't believe it was there in all of the roles I've had, especially because sometimes the roles are literally do what you're told. You know, as an intern, it's like, I mean, I can't be curious. I mean, I guess I'm curious, but and then there's so many times when I was newly made an editor, you know, I sort of, a lot of it felt like, you know, oh, maybe I felt like I owed something to certain people in the industry, or, you know, I owed something to, you know, this particular publicist or this particular, you know, movie studio that I owed them. You know, it's just what happens. You just go out and you say yes to the bid, guys. I no longer feel that way at all. And that was actually one of the biggest things to sort of improving my confidence as an editor. The only people I think, you know, I truly owe myself to or owe anything to are the contributors, the people that have, who are going out there and, you know, coming to me with ideas or sending me photo shoots they've already done or just sharing their work with me. Those are the people that I owe something to. And wherever this journey, you know, may go, as long as I don't forget who truly should benefit from, you know, the increase in readership or whatnot, I think it'll be okay. Like, as long as the contributors are looked after and we're doing everything we can to ensure that, you know, their lives are a bit easier, then it should be okay.
When you got offered or did you ask for the role of editor-in-chief, what was that like? And was it something that you felt like was your natural progression once you got to being like photo shoot editor and positions like that?
I remember it. And I remember just being like, Surely not. Like, surely, I don't know what's happening here. I don't understand. Yeah, I didn't quite understand how it would happen. Normally, mostly to my own detriment, I'd just be like, yeah, sure. And so this was just one of those, yeah, sure. I don't regret saying yes, but I wish I'd maybe understood it a bit better when I had said yes. But do you know what? Like I said, I learned from doing, and after, 3 years of, 3 or 4 years of maybe not doing it correctly, this fifth year it has clicked, and I finally into the groove, and I finally understand, and I finally have learned from, the multitude of mistakes that I've made. But it's got me here. I'm a lot more confident as an editor and as a person, and it's, yeah, no, it's been a good journey.
I guess you were quite a young editor-in-chief at that time for what people were taking on. And did you feel when you were saying yes and you brought that on and then maybe you started thinking, oh, mate, this is not what I was expecting. Did you feel a sense of imposter syndrome, or is that not really ever been a factor for you? Was it just a sense of, oh, I think I just need to learn way more within this? Or did you feel like maybe you weren't not deserving of the position, but maybe you weren't the right fit for what the magazine needed at that time?
The thing about me being young at the time, it also meant my stamina and like tolerance for work was quite high. And bearing in mind, I was working full time at this point, so I'd sort of go to my startup, do the 10 till 6, get home at 7, eat, and then work until 3 a.m. And I did that. That was my sort of schedule for a good 3 years. That was my life. And especially because at that time, that's also when, back when the world was open, there were, events to go to, there were gigs to go to, there were PRs to meet, and there was all this. So I had so much on my plate where actually if somebody had, if somebody said to me now, hey, do you want to be an editor in chief? I'd be like, there's no way I'm doing that again. Like, I do not have the I don't have the energy. I also don't have the patience to work like that. And to be frank, nobody should ever have to do that amount of work. As yeah, that was an unhealthy amount for me to be working back then. But from doing that, it was a bit of a delayed gratification. I am now seeing the fruits of that labor, and I'm now seeing, what comes from all that hard work I did. So it's sort of this toss-up. I don't want to glamorize that lifestyle at all. I think it was unhealthy to be working so much and have so much pressure on myself, mainly inflicted by myself. But I'm happy I stuck through it, and I'm happy I did do it because it helped me slow down and take control of my life now. So there were ups and downs, and I'm not going to comment on if it was the right thing to do or not.
I will leave that up to the listener to decide. That's an interesting one. And I guess that I know we focus quite a bit on fault at the moment, which has been really interesting to kind of hear your journey within that. With regards to the other stuff you're doing, because I know you were saying you were working full time and fault isn't your full time gig. There is so much more going on with you. Where did your desire to work within the corporate companies doing what you did, like the startups and everything with the videography and the photography, was there a desire there because you felt like there was maybe bigger budgets or there was different things that you were focusing on within that? What drew you to doing that as a career? What did you enjoy about it?
I guess, I mean, partly fear. Like, I've not had the confidence to go freelance ever before. I'm a freelancer now, but before then, I couldn't quite understand or think I'd be able to sort of support myself on my, on my wits alone. So I was like, no, let me get a full-time job, and that would allow me to, always know where my next paycheck's coming from, always know that I am good, my rent is always going to be paid. Also, I didn't want to fall behind either. I didn't want to sort of, I knew what was happening in publishing. I didn't want to have put all my eggs in that basket and then find that, oh, publishing's no more in a couple of years. And, you know, I assumed back then that I wouldn't be able to easily transition over to corporate. I mean, I now know that it probably wouldn't have been that difficult. But, and thirdly, you know, when I was a work experience in the office, you know, making teas, making coffees for everyone, I liked the office environment, you know. I flourished. I liked that it was very normal. It was sort of what I expected adults did. You know, you came in, you went to the office, you asked about everyone's weekend, you went to the coffee machine, you sat down, and I liked it. Like, I liked the Christmas parties. I liked all the random office jargon and stuff that happened. So I like the environment. Like, as creative as I am, there's something very beautiful in the normalcy of an office. There wasn't such a constraint on budgets in the corporate world, which sort of allowed the creativity to flow a bit further than it could at Fault. And at the same time, I never felt that my creativity was being stifled whenever we had to do something a bit more corporate, because I had Fault magazine on the side, and that's where really the creativity was boundless.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess going through all of these different roles, was it that one naturally jumped into the other, or when you left one company to work with the next, was it your advertising portfolio that you brought with you each time? What did that look like, your journey out of university and moving between those different companies?
I left for university and I started in sort of the corporate world. I went to a startup and I started doing like picture research. And then from the picture research, I became a picture editor at a travel company, which was like quite an easy transition. And then at the travel company, we started making travel videos after I joined, and we started really focusing on travel photography. So it always felt very creative. And then the travel company Cheap Flights was bought by Kayak. So then suddenly, oh, wow, I now work for Kayak, sure. And then we continued doing the photography. And then I went to IM, which is a photography company that also had like a advertising studio as part of the company. So I started working for that advertising agency, and we started doing very photography focused creative campaigns for all these other cool brands. And that is basically what I continue to do now that I've left there and I'm working for myself, and I've continued to do photography forward campaigns for other brands. But I also do a lot of, you know, I'm still continuing as a freelance journalist, you know, still, you know, writing, you know, Teen Vogue and Esquire magazine. So my portfolio is still very jumbled, but that's how I really like it. I like being able to, you know, jump into the corporate world, you know, then you rip off the suit, then you put on a t-shirt and a backwards cap for the advertising world, and then I put on the editor's suit when I want to work for Fault magazine. And that's sort of the healthiest way I've managed to do it. And it's worked out. Enjoying it.
I remember when I first started working, I was talking to like my dad, and we were talking about how he's probably in the last generation where they will start with one company and they'll probably stay with that company for their whole life. And especially now people coming out of university, but even 10 years ago or 15 years ago, people coming out of university, it's not really, or even not going to university, it's not going to be a linear path for them. It's going to be hopping around and trying to stay interested. And definitely the way like my generation grew up, we had Instagram, we had Snapchat, we had all these things where Vine was huge when I was in school, and you had 7 seconds to entertain us, and then after we're bored, we'll move on. And especially now, I think it's great that you're saying that you like how you can have four different jobs that you can go within, and you find that entertaining, because I think that will be the case for a lot of people going forward. It will be the case that you don't just have this one job that you put all your eggs in, this one basket. You do have different things you're doing, and especially in the creative careers, that will be the thing that keeps you entertained, but also some of them will pay more than others. Even if you love the other one more, it's great to have that balance between them so you can actually sustain all of them. Which is nice.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, my dad's the same. I think there's a clock somewhere in our house where it's like, for 25 years of service. And I was like, wow, I cannot imagine working on one company for 25 years. 5 years is probably my limit, to be honest. Like, but yeah, it's just different times. Which is also a beautiful thing. It highlights how many more opportunities our generation has, and how much you know, how much more control we have over our destinies and being able, especially after this pandemic, you know, people can now work a lot more. We're a lot more free with who we work for and how we work. And hopefully this continues after the world does get back to normal, that, you know, this working from home environment, or understanding that, hey, you know, if I've got two kids, I maybe want to take them to school and then come into the office, do my hours, pick them up and continue working from home. And I really hope the corporate world becomes more flexible and really takes the learnings from this, because it really is so much better for everyone's quality of life when we're not, you know, when we're not stuck with these sort of, you know, draconian rules about being at 9, leave at clock off at 5 and do it over again the next, you know, 40 years.
Miles, I'm going to ask you one more question before we finish up. And that is, I'm going to go back to Fault Magazine. And I just want to know, as you feel like you've hit your stride now with being the editor-in-chief, what do you want to see change or keep the same, I guess, with the magazine over the next... You've been there for 5 years. What would you love to see the magazine evolve into over the next 5 years? Do you have a plan for that, or is it kind of you're taking it day by day at the moment? I'd be really curious.
One of the biggest changes from, you know, my tenure at Vault is the sort of... It's always been a very diverse magazine, but I've also, you know, we've made it very clear to, you know, showcase more diversity in the people we put in, is, you know, the ethnicities, you know, where they're from, or what's, and the diversity in the art they create. I want to see that continue even more so now. And I also think that means as much behind the camera on these shoots as it does the people who are the stars. I think we've done very well at showcasing diverse talent and showing that we can do it respectfully. I think now it's about focusing on how can we actually be of service to this next generation of creatives like myself, you know, who maybe, you know, they don't, everyone needs to see themselves as part of every process. And I think it's about showing that, you know, you can work in this industry regardless of, you know, your upbringing, regardless of, you know, your disabilities, regardless of your skin color, and showing that, no, you can flourish and still be a part of the entertainment industry, you know, and not just, you know, the one star that breaks through onto the Netflix show. It's about how are the cameramen, how are the, you know, how are the ringers, how are all these other parts of the creative process, and how can we make sure that young people, regardless of anything, are aspiring to those high positions.
Do you ever chat to your parents about that? Do you feel like they're impressed with the role you've gone into, like in one of those leadership roles? Do you think that that's something they thought was attainable? And they might have said yes, but do you ever have those conversations with your family?
I think growing up, my parents definitely made sure that we knew, I've got two other brothers. My parents made sure that we understood that while, yeah, racism exists, well, yes, it's more difficult, you still have to work twice as hard to overcome them. My parents never wanted us to be victims of the system. They never wanted us to be discouraged away from reaching these high levels. In a way, it's not that they were ignorant to how hard it would be. They just wanted to make sure we were prepared for the fight and we were prepared for what we'd have to do to succeed in the world. You have to understand that the world is going to be different for you, but you can't allow that to be your downfall. And that is definitely a lesson that I've always taken with me. And yeah, I think it definitely helped all of us push to, you know, where we are at today.
Miles Holder, I think we've reached our time there. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been really interesting to just hear your whole journey from like discovering Fault to then your whole journey with that, but also all the other stuff you've done within like advertising and the corporate world and all of that. And even just from discovering it through, as we've decided, Ugly Betty, which is the whole reason why we're here today.
No, thank you so much for the invite coming on. It's nice. I've never actually thought about my journey, so... Yeah, it's good. Good for me as well.
If people want to find yourself or the magazine online, where could they find you?
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Instagram. My name is checking now. It's Miles underscore Holder, and you can find Fault Magazine at Fault underscore Magazine. There you go.
Nice, easy as that. Miles, thank you so much, and have thank a you. Good rest of the day.
You too, thanks so much.
Is that it? Is that the end? I think it is. Thanks everyone for staying until the very end of this episode of Creative Catalyst. If you found it enjoyable, if you found it interesting, please do send it to someone you think would enjoy this episode as well. And if you could rate me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, that would be so helpful for helping me reach a new audience on the platform. From me, Chris Campbell, have an awesome rest of your day.